Election Night in Minnesota continues on News Radio 830 WCCO, WCCO HD, Minneapolis, St. Paul.
CBS News. I'm Jim Shenaby. Too close to call. The presidential election appears to be hinging on five battleground states where the votes remain close. Let's go live to CBS News correspondent Peter King.
But Jim, Donald Trump leads in four of those five states, and time and math are both running out for Hillary Clinton fast. Wisconsin and Arizona are leaning Trump. Pennsylvania and Michigan are toss-ups, as is New Hampshire. That's where Clinton leads. Those add up to 61 electoral votes. Also still to be determined, Minnesota, a toss-up with 10 votes, and Trump has the edge for Alaska's 3 votes. Jim?
CBS News now projects Trump is within striking distance of the 270 electoral votes needed to win the election. Let's go live to Trump headquarters in New York City and correspondent Barry Bagnato.
The hotel ballroom here is just as packed as it was when these invited Trump supporters first arrived, well before the first polls closed. They are waiting to celebrate history. Trump's campaign manager, Kellyanne Conway, tweeted reasons for the Republicans' stunning success, including expanding the electoral map to reach deeply into blue areas, focusing on large rallies, and what she called the undercover Trump vote, people who apparently didn't trust pollsters and hid their preferences but revealed themselves when it counted. Let's go live to Clinton headquarters and CBS's Steve Futterman.
Barry, a few moments ago, they played the song Don't Stop Believing. That may be the fantasy dream of Hillary Clinton supporters, but the writing seems to be on the wall. Most Clinton supporters have left the Javits Center, including this woman.
Tonight, it's not the America that I grew up in, and I'm concerned about the future of our country.
Some Clinton supporters say they will support a President Donald Trump. Some people say they will not. Jim?
And Hillary Clinton now the projected winner in Maine. The potential outcome of the election has thrown a scare into the financial markets. The futures are all down. Some are down big. And the Asian markets are spooked. Lucy Kraft reports from Tokyo.
In Tokyo, they're calling it the Trump shock. The absence of any clear policy or direction for the U.S. economy in the event of a Republican win triggered a collapse on the Tokyo Stock Exchange, with the Nikkei average losing more than 5% of its value to close at 16,251. The dollar also tanked as investors sold off the U.S. currency to seek the safety of Japanese yen. Lucy Kraft, CBS News, Tokyo.
On Capitol Hill, not much expected to change. CBS News projecting Republicans will retain control of the House, and it appears the Senate will also stand pat. No, just one net loss to Democrats so far, one seat. Marco Rubio has easily won re-election to the Senate in Florida. While Democrats have benefited most from the overall Hispanic vote, Cuban Americans help Rubio keep his job. In exit polling, President Obama gets a thumbs up. More than half of the voters approving of the job he's done, but a majority still upset about the way the federal government is running. This is CBS News.
Is Election Night in Minnesota, sponsored by Hamline University on News Radio 830 WCCO and WCCO.com.
I'm going to jump in right here. Let's go to Clinton headquarters at Javits Center. Campaign manager John Podesta speaking. Let's pick that up.
I want you to know, I want every person in this hall to know, and I want every person across the country who supported Hillary to know, that your voices and your enthusiasm means so much to her and to Tim and to all of us. We are so proud of you. And we are so proud of her. She's done an amazing job, and she is not done yet. So thank you for being with her. She has always been with you. I have to say this tonight. Good night. We will be back. We'll have more to say. Let's get those votes counted, and let's bring this home. Thank you so much for all of you have done. You are in all of our hearts. Thank you.
That eliminates a concession speech from Hillary Clinton for tonight. That's what that was all about, from John Podesta, who has been extraordinarily close to Bill and Hillary Clinton
for decades. We'll react to that in a little bit. But Adam Carter, tell us the latest locally.
Yeah, that non-concession there might be one of the only disappointing things that they've experienced tonight at the Mall of America, the Radisson Blue down there, where Republican Party headquarters were tonight. And Susie Jones has been there since the start. Susie, what's happening there now?
Well, as Republicans here at the Radisson Blue were listening to that non-concession speech, there were a lot of boos in the room, just in case you're wondering. But there have been a lot of hugs, a lot of tears, a lot of high fives. This is really a joyous crowd in Bloomington, Republicans celebrating this victorious night. Now, calling it a historic night for Minnesota Republicans in the Minnesota House, defending its majority, House Speaker Kurt Dowd earlier tonight said that this election sends a message. All right. Apparently, we
do not have that, Susie.
We do not have that.
No problem.
So another piece of news tonight: State Senator David Hahn was defeated, and Dowd said he is quite sorry about that. They were good friends and worked together on a lot of things. He said he hopes to be able to flip the Senate to a Republican majority, but as you guys have mentioned earlier tonight, that's probably not going to happen. But overall, I just want to say, you guys, this place is packed. There are people still here. They're all glued to the television. There was obviously disappointment to hear the non-concession, but I think people here are waiting to hear from Donald Trump when he takes the stage here, and I presume it will be sometime here in the next little bit. Is that what you're hearing, Adam?
Yeah, that is what we're hearing, Susie. We'll take it from here, and we'll continue to check in with you. So, you know, Blois, you were talking about a little bit of the cat and mouse game, and you never know what really is going on between the two campaigns, what communications are taking place, because the normal protocol is at some point you have top handlers reach out to each other, and the loser then calls the victor and says, congratulations, you ran a great race. For the future of our country, I wish you the best. And then that person comes out, and he gives a speech. A lot of times it's the person's best speech, and we kind of wonder, why wasn't that person there? And then the victor comes out. You had these dueling announcements of Donald Trump about to address his supporters, and we expect that fairly soon. And then at about the same time, there were the network outlets reporting that John Podesta was coming out. So there must have been some communication, I'm assuming. I want your reaction, Catherine and Brian's reaction too, from the Clinton campaign to the Trump folks saying, no matter what happens tonight, even if we lose Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, we're not conceding. So we just want to let you know right now. This is extraordinarily rare when we do not get a concession speech on the night or even the early morning of the race.
It is extremely rare, but I actually doubt these two campaigns are communicating.
You don't think any communication whatsoever?
Maybe some text messages, but I think they...
So you think this timing was just coincidental?
No, I think they heard Trump was coming, and they said,
okay,
who's going to come out? And Podesta said, we got to let our guys go for the night.
Okay.
And we got to let supporters know we're done for the night. And that's what he said. Good night.
Yeah.
He said good night. That was the signal to say.
And we're not done.
We're not done.
Yeah. Catherine, you agree with Brian?
These are two candidates
who
didn't shake hands at the last debate or the debate before that. I absolutely agree with Blois. The handlers, though, sometimes get along.
I'm not saying Donald and Hillary were on the phone together.
One candidate has spent months calling for the others to be locked up in prison.
Yeah.
They are not coordinating in any friendly way. There's no way.
Brian, will we hear lock her up when he comes out here within the hour? Yes.
Yeah.
It's being chanted there earlier tonight, according to
earlier tonight.
Yep. Sure. And he said that he would have her investigated and prosecuted if he were president. I mean, he said that in a debate, right?
So his attorney general will appoint a special prosecutor.
Right, and his attorney general might be Rudy Giuliani.
Yeah.
Right?
Who has been the most critical of her compared to anybody.
Right. And so, yeah, I think, what Blois and Catherine are saying is right. I don't think there's any communication that's going on here. You know, the people that work on the Trump campaign for the most part are not just your regular political operatives. A lot of them are from the Trump organization,
yeah.
Right? It's a different kind of feel than some of the, you know, collegiality that exists between Democrats and Republicans who work on this stuff for a living. So it is a different kind of scenario.
Well, stay with that. Catherine, you go first. When you were involved in Governor Dayton's victory, what sort of communication was there between the two parties, the two sides?
In 2014, I spoke with Jeff Johnson's campaign manager earlier in the day, during the day on Election Day.
Yeah.
Said, hey, I just wanted to make sure you have my cell phone number.
Right.
Got his cell phone number. And then later in the evening, they were not quick to text me, but I got a text and we arranged a phone call.
Right.
And Jeff Johnson called my cell phone. I handed it to Governor Dayton and they had a nice conversation.
It was fairly brief or?
Yeah, it's a pretty quick conversation. Yeah. There's not much to say.
Yeah, it's tough. Right.
We waited a bit. It took him a little bit of time, and I probably wouldn't rush to call either if I were calling to concede. You take a minute, and you get your thoughts together. You make that call, and it was very gracious. He was very gracious, certainly, and most of the time in these cases, it's a pretty gracious phone call, but really difficult no matter what.
How about you, Ron?
We never got a call in 2006. So, you know, I was Governor Pawlenty's communications director in the 2006 reelection campaign. We ran against then Attorney General Mike Hatch. It was a pretty bitter race.
Yes, it was.
You know, Hatch is not known for pulling any punches. So, I mean, you know, we had gone after each other pretty aggressively. Governor Pawlenty won by one percentage point. So it was a close election. It was outside the recount, like we had 4 years later in the governor's race. But Mike Hatch never called us. So we just had to make the decision to go out and give our victory speech without having had that concession call, which feels a little weird, right?
Did they ever talk? In the short window?
Not that I'm aware of, no. I don't think so. And Hatch never gave a concession speech. So, I mean, it just, you know, at around 2 a.m. On that 2006 election, we just said, okay, we've got to go out and talk, right? Our crowd was really worn out. It was a really bad election night for Republicans. This was the midterm of George W. Bush's second term.
Yeah.
As you might recall, the Iraq War wasn't exactly popular around then.
This is pre-surge.
Right.
So the DFL took massive control of the Minnesota House.
Yeah, exactly. We lost control of the Minnesota House. Michelle Bachmann got elected to Congress for the first time, so she was there in a full ball gown, so that was fun. But we never got the call.
So was Adam covering
it. We went out at
2
a.m. and, you know,
wonderful.
The governor gave his speech and rock and roll, and that was all she wrote. But it was, a late night. I mean, it was later than this. It was around 2 a.m. When we felt confident in the numbers. We're able to go out and give that speech.
Okay, speaking of numbers, boys, Kyle was just very good to hand me the Michigan results as of 3 minutes ago. Okay. This is with 93% reporting. Donald Trump has 48.3%. Hillary Clinton has 46.5%. He has 2,113,000. She has 2,032,000. We go back to our last guest. Vicki Thomas from WWJ talking about the Detroit area and their contention, wondering about voting violations, who wasn't allowed, and maybe what tally's not in. I guess I'm even surprised that at this hour, when it's 2:13 in Michigan, that we are still 7% short. Does that surprise you? Without knowing complete history in Michigan?
No, I actually have my last big campaign that I did before I retired to do this was in Michigan. No, it doesn't surprise me at all. There's older machines. There's long lines. There's not a lot of volunteers. So this doesn't surprise me about Michigan. I think the thing that surprises me is that our last guest who talked about Michigan was talking about a lot of votes still out in Detroit, but I have 96% of the vote in Detroit. And so if that last 4% is that much, and again, how do they count their absentee ballots? How do they count the early votes? So we'll just have to wait and see. But no, the other thing.
That's a pretty big lead. We're talking 1.8% for her to overcome.
Right, exactly.
This late.
The other thing I want to mention about Michigan and Detroit in the Detroit area specifically. And I think this is going to be one of the themes that comes out. We saw it in the last few days. We saw it in early voting, that African-American voters were not coming out in the numbers that they had before, obviously, for Barack Obama. The other thing about Detroit, and in 1998, a guy by the name of Jeffrey Figer ran for governor.
Oh, yeah.
Michigan.
He was the attorney for Dr. Kevorkian.
Yes. Dr. Death.
Yeah.
And he beat two Democrat establishment candidates in the Democratic primary there. And his campaign looked a lot like Donald Trump's.
Yeah.
He was, it was the same, flamboyant, controversial, bombastic. In fact, he previewed Jesse. Before Jesse took off, he did. He lost the governor's race. But just know that those kind of candidates are appealing in places like Detroit.
Yeah, I think some people, Brian, might remember him. That's how it came to mind. A lot of times when Kevorkian would do interviews, because he was so reserved, it would be Figer who would pop, right? And he would do it, and he would dominate. And he probably was just so captivated by that, he said, I should take this show on the road and run for governor.
Right? Well, and I think you're going to see more of that, right? I mean, that's, you know, we talked about what about the Trump election is one-time Donald Trump phenomenon, and what is about the rules have changed? And I think there is part of this, the rules have changed in the sense that candidates that can break through the media coverage, that can talk directly to people, that can use social media, that can, you know, get outside of the bubble, you know, have a strong appeal. And I think that
But is this Ventura looking for that?
No, because it's not the same thing, right? I mean, there's that populist streak that runs through both of them, but it's different. And I think it can be different for other candidates in the future. So I think that it's about finding non-politicians, right? Finding authentic people who have, you know, a career in the private sector, who've done something interesting, or were a professional athlete, or, you know, have a different kind of background, not just your usual, you know, kind of stuffed suit politician. And I think you're going to see candidates who are a little less worried about being genteel and a little less worried about, you know, saying the right thing all the time, and more interested in trying to connect to people. And I don't know. I mean, that could go totally off the rails as well. But I think you're going to see that. I want to offer some breaking news, though,
Do you see your colleague nodding?
I know.
I just want to tell your colleague, I have that person.
Yeah.
Do we have Mark Cuban versus Donald Trump in 2020?
Well, no, I think you might have Michelle Obama versus Donald Trump in 2020.
David Axelrod, among others, guaranteed his children's life.
That would not happen.
That would not happen. That there's no chance she would run.
No, well, she would be a phenomenon. I mean, that's the thing is she is authentic. She can speak to people. She can get outside of the media coverage, right? She can do all those things.
She might say that I never anticipated this. This would be the one thing that would bring me back.
Right, who knows? Now, in Minnesota's first congressional district, in southern Minnesota, Rochester, Mankato, et cetera, right now with 94% of precincts in, incumbent Tim Walz is leading by 29 votes.
Yes, I see that.
29 votes. Right, this is a race.
I'm thinking that might be within the margin.
No one was looking at, no one spent money on.
Nope.
Outside groups didn't put a dime into these races. And, you know, Jim Hagedorn ran last time, so he's got a little bit of name ID built
lost
in from running before.
Fairly decisively, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. And he's down by 29 votes, you know, and getting down to the final set of precincts in the first congressional district.
Yeah, no, I think that is, I think that starts to say it all. And again, let's go back to the votes in Olmsted County for president. 46% for Hillary Clinton, 45% for Donald Trump. And if Tim Walz is only running kind of those kind of numbers in Olmsted County, Jim Hagedorn's got a big chance.
Let's make two more points, and then we'll get to the CBS update 120. Donald Trump is, according to CNN, arriving at his election headquarters. I think we're going to carry it, Adam. I mean, just a hunch, we're going to carry that. And I was very proud of Adam during the break. He said, listen, you guys can leave, but I'm not leaving here until this race is declared. I am a journalist.
Which I did not say which race.
Oh, that is a very good point. So at some point, we believe within the hour, we will hear from a man who most of the data is pointing to as the next president of the United States. But this is not his victory speech. This is his pre-victory speech when the Clinton campaign has said through John Podesta, go home. We're not giving up. We're not conceding. We will continue to battle for you. So let's go to CBS, get the latest, and we'll come back with you here at WCCO.
CBS News Special Report, Election 2016.
A presidential election going in an unexpected direction, not over as far as the Hillary Clinton campaign is concerned, with Donald Trump leading both the popular and electoral vote. Clinton campaign chairman John Podesta appeared before supporters minutes ago.
It's been a long night, and it's been a long campaign, but I could say we can wait a little longer, can't we?
But with Trump less than 30 electoral votes from the presidency, the Clinton side still wants more numbers.
We will be back. We'll have more to say. Let's get those votes counted, and let's bring this home.
Trump has just arrived at his headquarters, also their correspondent, Major Garrett.
On this upper Midwest aspect of the Trump campaign, they are seeing exactly what they hope to see, and they believe they are seeing a solid path to victory, paved in part by the industrial Midwest.
At the White House now for CBS News, correspondent Margaret Brennan.
President Obama said before the polls closed that when the sun rises, America will still be the greatest nation on earth. I think it's safe to say he didn't think he would wake up to this kind of result.
The results so far, Donald Trump leading Hillary Clinton in the electoral vote count, 244 to 218. The control of Congress also appears to be staying with the Republican Party. CBS News Special Report, I'm Tom Foti.
Minnesota's election station, News Radio 830, WCCO. Election night in Minnesota, News Radio 830, WCCO.
Donald Trump has arrived at his campaign headquarters, New York City, at the Hilton Hotel. Why? So I'm assuming his hotel has no ability to have a ballroom of some sort, Brian. It just seems bizarre to me that he can't be at a Trump hotel to do this.
Yeah, I mean, like,
right? I mean, is there a Trump hotel
in New York?
No.
There'd be a Trump Tower.
Trump Tower, right?
Where it is
a hotel. No, yeah, it doesn't have a ballroom. Right, they just have to ride up and down the escalator all night. That would get tedious.
For this, he tells everybody get in a bus. All right, so we'll can we do just a little speculation this segment? Okay, because we don't have a gubernatorial race this time. We don't have a Senate race this time. So in 2018, we will have the governor's race, and then we will have Amy Klobuchar up, correct?
Correct.
So here's my dream scenario for 2018. The governor's race. Tim Pawlenty against Amy Klobuchar. Your guy. Is there any chance your guy is going to run again to be the governor of the state?
Well, you know, I talk to him regularly.
You've been very candid all night long, so no tap dancing.
All of a sudden I turned around and walked out of the studio.
Not feeling very well.
You know what the Governor Pawlenty has said to me is, Brian, I'm politically retired, and I said, you're retired, okay. So can I say you're like the South Florida of politics? And he's like, yeah, that's fine. I'm the South Florida of politics. So from his perspective, he's been there, done that. He was a two-term governor of Minnesota. He served 10 years in the legislature. So I think the odds are very, very slim. I think
the odds were very slim that Donald Trump would win it.
Well, right. All kinds of crazy things can happen. It's even more unlikely that he would run against Amy Klobuchar.
Yeah.
Right? Nobody in Minnesota wants to run against Amy Klobuchar.
Yeah.
She's the most popular politician in the state.
Yep.
And I think the biggest question mark for 2018 is, does Amy Klobuchar want to run for re-election to the Senate, or does Amy Klobuchar want to run for governor? And at various times, various political operatives have made the case for either of those two. So I think it's an open question.
Yep.
But she kind of clears the field on the DFL side. And, in some ways, she clears the field more broadly for whichever race she gets in, because she's recognized as a tough opponent.
What do you
think? I will just say that, Brian, that was handled very well.
Yeah, it's like he's campaigning for his old job
again. The scenario that I understand, and Brian and you and I haven't talked about this, and I don't mean to put you on the spot, is that Governor Pawlenty has been making several calls and talking to several people throughout the state with the scenario that if Amy Klobuchar does run for governor, that this is the U.S. Senate seat that he wanted back then.
Oh, yeah.
And would then
got the phone call.
Got the phone call from Dick Cheney,
yep,
not to run for the Senate, but to run for governor in 2002. And here we go, that then he would run for the U.S. Senate. So not to put you on the spot, Brian, but that's the scenario that I'm going to write about in the morning, because I know he has been contacting
it
legislators.
It is the morning.
Oh, thanks. Well, I was going to save it for 6:20.
Yeah.
All right, now I need new material. Yeah. But that so just that's the scenario I see playing out. I don't see Pawlenty running for governor. I see if Klobuchar does run for governor, Pawlenty runs for the Senate.
What
and I
think?
Agree. He's not going to try to challenge Klobuchar for the Senate.
Well, and to be clear, like, I think that Tim Pawlenty should run for office again. I think he is extremely skilled. I think he did a great job as governor. I think that he connects well with voters, with the people of Minnesota, all the things that we've been talking about. I mean, Tim Pawlenty can go into a VFW, you know, in Clearbrook, just the same as he can go into a boardroom in downtown Minneapolis. He, you know, has an ability to talk to people, listen to them, and understand where they're coming from. So from my personal perspective, I hope he'll run, but I know what he's told me, and that is that he's politically retired. So, you know, I accept that. I don't work on electoral politics at this stage of my career, so I'm not worried about it. But I think he would be great if he chose to do that. He would be a very strong candidate from the moment he announces. He could largely clear the Republican field. He could raise a lot of money really quickly. And I think, you know, his path to winning under the scenario that Boyce talks about is pretty good.
Catherine, what about Amy Klobuchar instead of running and pretty much guaranteed to get her third term? What about her saying, listen, I've had two successful terms. I'd like to be the governor. It puts her in a better position if she has federal aspirations.
To be clear, I've worked on the last two campaigns for governor, and I'm just not ready. I don't care yet about the next one. I'll get there. I don't know what tonight does. You know, should Donald Trump be elected, I don't know what that does for Amy Klobuchar if she feels like she needs to stay. I mean, to keep our seat safe.
Yeah.
Or maybe in 2 years, you know, if she feels like if we feel like another DFLer would be ready to run, she feels like it's safe, maybe she could try something else. I don't know what, you know, if this changes anything for her calculations. I have heard lots of different scenarios. Not sure. There's going to be a lot of DFLers wanting to run for governor. There's going to be a lot of Republicans wanting to run for governor in a couple of years. Lots of possibilities at this point, I think.
Let's do this. Let's remind you where we are at.
Let me remind you with a tweet, Chad.
Sure.
David Duke has tweeted out.
David Duke, yes.
This is one of the most exciting nights of my life. Make no mistake about it. Our people have played a huge role in electing Trump. Who do you think he's talking about, Chad? Who are those people?
I don't think it's the coalition of Hillary Clinton supporters. I don't believe so. You know, so David Duke, who the Trump folks at times would criticize and other times would be a little silent in their criticism, David Duke speaking up. Mr. Trump himself, we are told, has arrived about 20 minutes ago or so at his election headquarters. He will speak. It is, of course, now in New York City in Manhattan, 2:30. Let's hear from CBS and expect to hear from Mr. Trump before this hour is done.
CBS News Special Report, Election 2016.
Trailing Donald Trump in electoral votes badly, Hillary Clinton has decided not to address supporters gathered at her headquarters in New York City tonight. Campaign Chairman John Podesta did address the crowd.
Every vote should count. Several states are too close to call, so we're not going to have anything more to say tonight.
And reporters were informed their power would be cut. The election appears to hinge now on five battleground states that are too close to call, but several are leaning toward Trump, including Arizona and Wisconsin. Correspondent Nancy Cordes.
No one thought that this race would be coming down to a state like Wisconsin, and here's why. Back in 2012, President Obama won that state by 7 points. In 2008, he won it by 14 points.
As CBS News projects, Donald Trump has 245 of the 270 electoral votes needed for victory. CBS News Special Report, I'm Jim Shenevich.
For the first time tonight, a major outlet has made this projection. Donald Trump is the next president of the United States. Adam Carter, you've seen it. Associated Press.
Associated Press called the Wisconsin, then immediately following that called the race for Donald Trump. 45th president of the United States.
Yes. So this is the first outlet that has reached the number of at least 270. You have the different outlets from the print side and the electronic side, which have projected certain states. None of them have put Donald Trump over. But again, to reiterate what Adam just said, Associated Press, going back to Beloit Olson, Associated Press viewed as one of the more conservative in its history of projections, viewed as one that shapes the idea of other media outlets, is the first one to say that the 45th president of the United States will be the quintessential outsider, Donald Trump. We're back in moments on CCO.
Election Night in Minnesota, sponsored by Hamlin University on News Radio 830 WCCO. Is Election Night in Minnesota on News Radio 830 WCCO and WCCO.com.
All along, various observers, various pundits, various journalists have said this is an election unlike any other. Would we see the first female president? Would we see an outsider with no political expertise end up winning? Just to add to this, Adam, we are at a point now at 2:36 in New York where both candidates had their expected victory celebrations within 2 miles of each other. And as we speak right now, among the respected high-end media outlets, the one that has projected Donald Trump over 270, and against just one, is the Associated Press. And they have Donald Trump, as you pointed out, in winning Wisconsin, putting him over the top. We have in here CNN, Fox, ABC, and CBS on. They are all short. A reminder, this hour began with John Podesta, the campaign chief, praising the supporters at the Javits Center, praising Hillary Clinton, saying, we are not done, we are not giving up, but go home tonight, letting us know that there would be no concession speech. Are we expecting, when Donald Trump speaks rather soon, that he is going to treat this as if he has won the presidency tonight? What do you think?
No doubt.
No doubt at all.
No doubt. And,
yeah.
And we'll probably get some sort of negative reaction as to why his opponent isn't conceding, too.
I think that's right, Jordana. What do you think? What is he going to say about Hillary Clinton in this speech, if anything?
Well, he'll go back to the last debate, how he caught all that flack for saying, I'll reserve judgment to see what the results are. And he's going to say, well, the results are obviously, I crushed her, I killed her, I'm on top, and she won't even talk to me. So yeah. I'll go back there.
We have another projection. Let's go to it right here. No, we don't have
it. Wasn't.
Oh, I was reading.
What else is there?
No, this is Kelly O'Donnell, NBC News Capitol Hill correspondent. Source tells her that Clinton has conceded in a phone call with Donald Trump.
Well, that's kind of a call.
That takes the wind out of his sails.
That's a pretty
set match.
Okay, then what was John Podesta saying then, Brian McClung?
Well, I think he was saying there's not going to be a speech, right? So,
yeah.
I mean, he was just trying to let people know, hey, it's 2 a.m. in New York, and you know this isn't going our way. So we're gonna count every vote, we're gonna fight on, etc. But you can go home and let them go. But if that's accurate that there's been a concession, then then that really is it. And then, it is, though, as we were talking about before, it is, we were on the verge of seeing, I think, a Trump speech regardless, right? Yeah. He was going to come out and talk to his reporters and essentially declare victory. It is always a little weird to do that when you haven't had the conversation with your opponent. I mean, yeah. That is
right.
part of the construct of American politics. And, the losing campaign, having that moment and that realization that it hasn't gone their way and congratulating the other side and moving on. So now it sounds like we've had that. And I think, then this speech coming up is really going to mark that turning point.
Kelly O'Donnell's a longtime respected reporter, Catherine. I would assume her information is right on here. I think there's going to be some very interesting reporting on how these last 2 hours played out when some people were trying to tell her what the margin is in these states. Is it worth waiting? How you should play this out? Now, I remember there was an election in 2000 when there was a concession and then there was a phone call back. So I guess we have precedent of that, but how do you take this news?
Yeah, this is really hard. not what we saw coming all night. And I'm seeing CNN's reporting this now, too, that Clinton yep. calls to concede. I was just reading on Twitter, the New York Times reported last week that Trump has been privately musing about all the ways he'll punish his enemies after Election Day. So I'm done saying anything's for sure. I have no idea what to expect when he comes out right now, what he's going to say, if he's ready to, lock her up or if he's ready to be president.
Well, that's what he promised, that he was going to put her in jail.
He hasn't promised that he would.
Now he has to do that to his followers. That's what his followers want.
That's right.
Let's just look at what Fox News is projecting right now, that Donald Trump has won the presidency. They have added to what AP has done. They are the first network outlet to go with the words, Donald Trump wins presidency. As was pointed out, Dana Bash also pointed out that Clinton calls Trump to concede election. I look over your shoulder, Blois. I look at ABC and CBS. They have not reached that point yet, but we are still awaiting Donald Trump to speak. And we talked before about the lack of coordination. There probably had to be some coordination letting them know that a phone call was about to take place. And maybe that's part of the reason why multiple outlets have been reporting here for a while. And I believe CNN is now going to project that Donald Trump, has won Arizona. That in their projection isn't going to put him over 270. They still are short of that total, but it's inevitable at this point.
Well, but CNN had not called Trump in Wisconsin, and they did as well. So
yep.
They have Michigan, Pennsylvania, New Hampshire out. I think
New York Times has also right. just declared.
One thing, we did talk about the campaigns not talking to each other and that there probably wasn't any coordination. But I'm reminded, and we should all be reminded, that Ivanka and Chelsea are very good friends.
Yep.
And have said that they communicated throughout the campaign.
Yep.
So I'm guessing if there was a channel, that may have been it.
How do you take this in, Adam Carter, among the memorable, surprising political nights at the presidential level? 2000 was such a stunner of, it was so close. Wait, we have a victor. Wait, we don't have a victor. And then we had months of uncertainty. This apparently is all going to get resolved in one night. An improbable candidate against the unbelievable establishment person, when she's going to break the glass ceiling, he's losing. Again, I'll repeat this. There wasn't a single electoral college that had him over 270. No. Not one.
Going into tonight.
Zero.
We saw a reversal of astonishing proportions. I've never seen anything like it.
He might end up, Jordana, you chime in, he might end up over 300 and not one had him at 270.
That's why she had to just call and be done with this. Mm-hmm. So yeah. as a country,
Yeah. We can move on.
Yeah.
We can put this to bed.
Right.
The country has spoken.
Yes.
They want Donald Trump. Chad, now it's going to be interesting. You and me and anybody else as radio hosts, because I am unfamiliar with this country. I now have to learn who this country is. That is not who I thought we were.
Yep.
And I have, my eyes have been opened tonight to a whole new electorate, and I am anxious to get to know them.
What do you think, Brian? Well, what is it? Let me ask you this way. What does it say about Trump as he is coming out? Well, right now it looks like Mike Pence and his wife and their family. What does it say about the effect Trump had when he did this so much in spite of many prominent Republicans?
Yeah,
whereas Hillary had so much support from the Democrats. I mean, she's out there with her husband, the president, the first lady, the boss, Bon Jovi, all of them. And Trump has his family and Pence's, and that's it, as he travels around.
And Trump was bragging about it, right? I mean, they would say Trump goes it alone. He's like, yeah, that's right. I don't need to have Beyonce. I get a bigger crowd myself than they do with Beyonce, right? So then they had to fact check whether or not that was true. So, it is a strange time, and I guess to see Mike Pence is stepping up to the microphone.
Let's hear from the man who will be the vice president of this country, Mike Pence.
Historic night. The American people have spoken, and the American people have elected their new champion. America has elected a new president, and it's almost hard for me to express the honor that I and my family feel that we will have the privilege to serve as your Vice President of the United States of America. I come to this moment deeply humbled, grateful to God for his amazing grace. Grateful to my family, my wonderful wife, Karen, our son, Michael, and his fiancée, Sarah, our daughter, Audrey, far away, and our daughter, Charlotte. I could not be here without them. And I'm deeply grateful to the American people for placing their confidence in this team and giving us this opportunity to serve. And I'm mostly grateful to our president-elect, whose leadership and vision will make America great again. So let me say, it is my high honor and distinct privilege to introduce to you the President-elect of the United States of America, Donald Trump.
Trump family is walking in at this point to, let's just say, an interesting choice of music. I believe we have our new king, it sounds like, right here. A night that Trump supporters told us would happen all along. A night that Clinton supporters scoffed and laughed at. And the president-elect of this country, Donald Trump, is coming down the stairs. It's not often we see his youngest son, Barron, but Barron is there with Melania and the rest of the family. And a man at the age of 70
who has dominated the headlines in New York for decades for many reasons. Through real estate, through disappointments, through his brand, through his television show. He had threatened to run many times before as a Reform Party candidate. A man who had a very good relationship at times with the Clintons. The photo that we've seen many times at Donald Trump and Melania's wedding. Smile on the faces of Bill and Hillary Clinton. And a man who beat 16 other candidates. Now shakes hands with his vice president. Here he is, the president-elect, Donald J. Trump.
Thank you. Thank you very much, everybody. Sorry to keep you waiting. Complicated business. Complicated. Thank you very much. I've just received a call from Secretary Clinton. She congratulated us, it's about us, on our victory. And I congratulated her and her family on a very, very hard-fought campaign. I mean, she fought very hard. Hillary has worked very long and very hard over a long period of time, and we owe her a major debt of gratitude for her service to our country. I mean that very sincerely. Now it's time for America to bind the wounds of division. We have to get together. To all Republicans and Democrats and independents across this nation, I say it is time for us to come together as one united people. It's time. I pledge to every citizen of our land that I will be president for all Americans, and this is so important to me. For those who have chosen not to support me in the past, of which there were a few people, I'm reaching out to you for your guidance and your help so that we can work together and unify our great country. As I've said from the beginning, ours was not a campaign, but rather an incredible and great movement made up of millions of hardworking men and women who love their country and want a better, brighter future for themselves and for their family. It's a movement comprised of Americans from all races, religions, backgrounds, and beliefs who want and expect our government to serve the people, and serve the people it will. Working together, we will begin the urgent task of rebuilding our nation and renewing the American dream. I've spent my entire life in business looking at the untapped potential in projects and in people all over the world. That is now what I want to do for our country. Tremendous potential. I've gotten to know our country so well. Tremendous potential. It's going to be a beautiful thing. Every single American will have the opportunity to realize his or her fullest potential. The forgotten men and women of our country will be forgotten no longer. We are going to fix our inner cities and rebuild our highways, bridges, tunnels, airports, schools, hospitals. We're going to rebuild our infrastructure. which will become, by the way, second to none. And we will put millions of our people to work as we rebuild it. We will also finally take care of our great veterans. We've been so loyal, and I've gotten to know so many over this 18-month journey. The time I've spent with them during this campaign has been among my greatest honors. Our veterans are incredible people. We will embark upon a project of national growth and renewal. I will harness the creative talents of our people, and we will call upon the best and brightest to leverage their tremendous talent for the benefit of all. It's going to happen. We have a great economic plan. We will double our growth and have the strongest economy anywhere in the world. At the same time, we will get along with all other nations willing to get along with us. We will be. We'll have great relationships. We expect to have great, great relationships. No dream is too big. No challenge is too great. Nothing we want for our future is beyond our reach. America will no longer settle for anything less than the best. We must reclaim our country's destiny and dream big and bold and daring. We have to do that. We're going to dream of things for our country and beautiful things and successful things once again. I want to tell the world community that while we will always put America's interests first, we will deal fairly with everyone, All people and all other nations. We will seek common ground, not hostility, partnership, not conflict. And now, I'd like to take this moment to thank some of the people who really helped me with this, what they are calling tonight, very, very historic victory. First, I want to thank my parents, who I know are looking down on me right now. Great people. I've learned so much from them. They were wonderful in every regard. I had truly great parents. I also want to thank my sisters, Marianne and Elizabeth, who are here with us tonight. And where are they? They're here someplace. They're very shy, actually. And my brother, Robert, my great friend. Where is Robert? Where is Robert? My brother, Robert. And they should all be on this stage, but that's okay. They are great. And also my late brother, Fred. Great guy. Fantastic guy. Fantastic family. I was very lucky. Great brothers, sisters, great, unbelievable parents. To Melania and Don. And Ivanka. And Eric. And Tiffany. And Baron, I love you and I thank you, and especially for putting up with all of those hours. This was tough. This was tough. This political stuff is nasty and it's tough. So I want to thank my family very much. Really fantastic. Thank you all. Thank you all. And Lara, unbelievable job. Unbelievable. Vanessa, thank you. Thank you very much. What a great group. You've all given me such incredible support, and I will tell you that we have a large group of people. You know, they kept saying we have a small staff. Not so small. Look at all the people that we have. Look at all of these people. And Kellyanne, and Chris, and Rudy, and Steve, and David. We have got tremendously talented people up here, and I want to tell you, it's been very, very special. I want to give a very special thanks to our former mayor, Rudy Giuliani. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. He traveled with us and he went through meetings. Hey, that Rudy never changes. Where's Rudy? Where is he? Rudy. Governor Chris Christie, folks, was unbelievable. Thank you, Chris. The first man, first senator, first major, major politician. Let me tell you, he is highly respected in Washington because he's as smart as you get. Senator Jeff Sessions. Where's Jeff? Great man. Another great man. Very tough competitor. He was not easy. He was not easy. Who is that? Is that the mayor that showed up? Is that Rudy? Oh, Rudy got up here. Another great man who has been really a friend to me. But I'll tell you, I got to know him as a competitor because he was one of the folks that was negotiating to go against those Democrats. Dr. Ben Carson. Where's Ben? Where is Ben? And by the way, Mike Huckabee is here someplace, and he is fantastic. Mike and his family, Sarah, thank you very much. General Mike Flynn. Where is Mike? And General Kellogg. We have over 200 generals and admirals that have endorsed our campaign, and they're special people, and it's really an honor. We have 22 Congressional Medal of Honor recipients. We have just tremendous people. A very special person who, believe me, and, you know, I'd read reports that I wasn't getting along with him. I never had a bad second with him. He's an unbelievable star. He is, that's right, how did you possibly guess? So let me tell you about Reince. And I've said this. I said Reince, and I know it. I know it. Look at all those people over there. I know it. Reince is a superstar. But I said, they can't call you a superstar, Reince, unless we win. Because you can't be called a superstar like Secretariat. If Secretariat came in second, Secretariat would not have that big, beautiful bronze bust at the track at Belmont. But I'll tell you, Reince is really a star. And he is the hardest working guy. And in a certain way, I did this. Reince, come up here. Where is Reince? Get over here, Reince. Boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. It's about time you did this, Reince. Huh? My God. Yeah, say a few words. Ah, come on. Say something.
Ladies and gentlemen, the next president of the United States, Donald Trump. Thank you. It's been an honor. God bless. Thank God.
Amazing guy. Our partnership with the RNC was so important to the success and what we've done. So I also have to say I've gotten to know some incredible people, the Secret Service people. They're tough and they're smart and they're sharp, and I don't want to mess around with them, I can tell you. And when I want to go and wave to a big group of people and they rip me down and put me back down in the seat. But they are fantastic people, so I want to thank the Secret Service. And law enforcement in New York City, they're here tonight. These are spectacular people, sometimes underappreciated, unfortunately. But we appreciate them. We know what they go through. So it's been what they call a historic event. But to be really historic, we have to do a great job. And I promise you that I will not let you down. We will do a great job. We will do a great job. I look very much forward to being your president. And hopefully at the end of 2 years or 3 years or 4 years or maybe even 8 years, You will say, so many of you worked so hard for us, but you will say that that was something that you were really were very proud to do. And I can thank you very much. And I can only say that while the campaign is over, our work on this movement is now really just beginning. We're going to get to work immediately for the American people. And we're going to be doing a job that hopefully you'll be so proud of your president. You'll be so proud. Again, it's my honor. It was an amazing evening. It's been an amazing two-year period. And I love this country. Thank you. Thank you very much.
The words of the 45th president of the United States, Donald J. Trump. Adam Carter, we were here earlier during our normal shift on the day the previous summer when he came down the escalator. And I'm not even sure Donald Trump at that point thought he would be the next president. He made news that day and kind of typified the type of candidate he was going to be. He was either going to call out and be as non-PC as possible or offend groups and continue to do it throughout the next 18 months. Most Republicans at that time thought he had no chance. Democrats laughed at the idea. He was running against 16 people, many of them well-regarded governors, senators, and he continued to surprise throughout, but no surprise matches tonight when he is going to win, and he is going to win with a large total. CNN has him at 288 right now. He might close in on 300 and become the winner in the 58th presidential election. How do you take in this whole night?
The most surprising thing, I think, I didn't watch every single Donald Trump stump speech, but this by far the most presidential speech that he's delivered.
Yep.
Conciliatory. He's obviously congratulating Hillary Clinton. Really nothing negative said about her tonight.
Kind words afterwards.
Kind words. And for a large part, the speech mostly positive.
Jordana, how about you?
Yeah, I'm surprised. I was surprised at how presidential it was. No talk of locking Hillary away. No talk of, you know, banning certain religions or keeping refugees out. There was no wall mentioned. So none of the campaign promises mentioned. But again, off the cuff, he's calling Reince Priebus up out of the audience to come and say hi during his speech. Just very Donald Trump. Although he did a good job with this speech. But we can expect to have many surprises when he speaks to our country and other global leaders.
He's not going to change, Brian. I'll give him credit for being diplomatic, but a person at the age of 70 who just showed his style in vanquishing 16 Republicans and Hillary Clinton is going to say, why should I change?
Yeah, why would he change?
Yeah.
He's not. I mean,
right.
And frankly, that was, you know, when he won the Republican primaries, then a lot of people said, well, now he's going to pivot and have a different approach for the general election. And he did not.
No.
He just stuck with the same thing. And I think he has a sense of what works. And I think he does. He knows this from his time playing the New York media like a fiddle. I mean, for decades, he played the tabloids to his advantage.
Yes,
he built up his reputation. It helped him build up. I mean, part of his wealth that he has created is not through things that he's actually built or sold. It's selling his name. Right. So he's building up a brand identity and then he was leasing the use of his name. So he understood how to do that. And that's, you could get a feel for that during this campaign. He wasn't listening to pollsters or the media. He was listening to the sense that he got when he was speaking at these big rallies. And so, yeah, I don't think he's going to change. I mean, this is a calmer, more conciliatory. I mean, at least he had the sense to understand that his first speech as president-elect, he needed to strike the right tone. And it was important to do that. And he did it. Now, he should have done that as well at his speech at the Republican National Convention.
Yep.
And I think a lot of people felt like probably up to this point, that was maybe his best speech, was a speech at the convention. I still thought that was kind of a wild speech. I mean, he was yelling through most of it, right? So now he figured out, he toned it down, said what he needed to, right? We're going to try to unify and bring people together. So
he might still be in shock.
It's stunning. And it's stunning. And here's the last point that I want to make is that a lot of us were saying we didn't think this was going to be a, quote, wave election. We thought that this was going to be a very jumbled election because it was very close, nationally in the presidential election, a lot of battleground states in play, the U.S. Senate potentially going to 50-50 or even Democrat control. What's the Trump impact on down ballot races? And so a lot of us, myself included, thought it was not going to be a wave election. It was going to be kind of hit or miss and very localized election. And we were wrong. It was a wave election. Donald Trump has swept the country. He has outperformed what anyone thought he would do. Republicans now hold at least 33 governorships.
Wow.
That's a record. Last set in 1922, right? Republicans will control the White House, the U.S. House, and the U.S. Senate. And so that is the definition of a wave election. And we did not see that coming. We didn't think that was where we were headed, but that's where we ended up.
Catherine?
Going back to Donald Trump's remarks just now, the bar is so low. I think we're all sitting here waiting for him to come out and start yelling and saying outrageous things. The fact that he didn't doesn't mean that was a presidential speech. I didn't hear his vision. I didn't hear any great plans for our country. I heard him stand up there and not say the wrong thing, right? And that doesn't equal a vision for our country from the president. And the reality is we're seeing on social media, we're hearing reports from what's happening in the ballroom, still a lot of really dangerous rhetoric. And this is going to be a huge test for Donald Trump to see if he can bring people along with him, if he means what he just said and that we need to all work together and he'll be a president for all people. His supporters are not saying that. There's nothing conciliatory about what they're saying online in this room. And he's the one who has stirred this up and turned out people and created the sentiment, and he is the one who could change it now. I'm very skeptical at the moment. I'm also very tired, so we will see. maybe feeling better tomorrow, but this is an extraordinary test. I've never seen anything like this for a person.
Probably add too that this tone is probably much to the chagrin of many of his supporters.
Yeah.
Too. They probably want him to come out and see, I told you so. And
he's not going to change though. This is how he was tonight, but that doesn't mean
he can't.
Yeah,
he's not capable of change,
and he doesn't want to. And it allowed him to win. Blois, you have the final word.
I actually do think he will have a different tone than he campaigned on. I think he's got people around him. We've reflected about Jesse Ventura before. One of the things we have to remember is that Jesse Ventura put people of both parties around him.
Yep, smart people.
Smart people. I don't think Trump will put Democrats around him. But I do think there's a reason at his core that he's been successful beyond branding. And I think it's because he understands audiences and he understands the job at hand when it's there. This is pure populism that we haven't seen. And well, we saw it with Obama, but we haven't seen it from a Republican in quite some time, Reagan.
Yeah.
And so I think it's still going to be very controversial. I think his policy proposals are going to outrage the left. I think there's going to be demonstrations in the street during his inauguration. I don't think we're going to have this calm country. But I don't think that he nor the people around him nor the Republican leaders in Congress want volatility. They want to move an agenda forward, because if he is a failure, they know that the reverse will happen in 2 years and in 4 years. And ultimately, Republicans have been looking for a permanent majority for decades.
A transition is about to take place from Barack Obama to Donald Trump. That phone call and that handshake will be something to see. I want to thank everybody involved in our coverage tonight, from Bob Schomper, Lindsay Peterson, Kyle Sheely, Lindsay Gensel, Susie Jones, Edgar Linares, and everybody here in studio, from Adam, Jordana, Catherine, Ryan, Blois, Chris, and Dan. This is Chad Hartman saying good night. And the 45th president of the United States, the president-elect, is Donald J. Trump.
Minnesota's election station, News Radio 830, WCCO.